talk a bunch of duck sports. And a little big dance, our guest, a returning champ, does a terrific job keeping us wired into Oregon athletics for Duck Territory. Online, duckterritory.com. On Twitter, the handle is @Eric_Scopel. Eric Scopel joins us. Scopes, how's life treating you these days?
Well, I like the change in weather. It's been nice being out doing things, and not too many things, but things that I'm socially distanced and allowing me to maybe get a breath of fresh air after being cooped up for, I don't know, 5 or 6 months.
So if as a Gonzaga grad, obviously I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about this team. Back in the Final Four, chasing history, two wins for matching the 1976 Indiana team. I mean, we knew this team was loaded and one of the teams to beat, but they're kind of taking no prisoners watching them. How lethal are these Bulldogs?
Well, I mean, it was, I think, pretty telling for somebody who covers Oregon sports to watch USC really handle Oregon in the Elite Eight, or I should say Sweet 16, about a week ago, and then the next game see that same USC team look pretty much incompetent and incapable of slowing down the Zags. And I think that was, I mean, I thought this was a pretty good Oregon team. I didn't think they were going to win a national championship or make a Final Four, but like I had actually penciled them in there in my bracket as a Elite Eight team against Gonzaga and thought they could give Gonzaga a decent game. And now I think maybe there's some folks around you that obviously don't want to turn down an Elite Eight opportunity, but that maybe they're kind of happy they didn't get that chance because they weren't embarrassed the way USC was. So, I mean, it's pretty special, and it really does. And being someone who's obviously followed that program for over 10 years now, I'm aging myself. Started in 2007, graduated from Gonzaga in 2011. It's pretty crazy it's been that long, I guess, now that I'm thinking about it, but it's pretty exciting to think how close they are to finally realizing this. They've obviously had a number of teams get close, one play for a national championship, and really have a couple opportunities late to win a national championship against North Carolina the same year Oregon made the Final Four. It really feels like this is the year, and I think I know I've obviously quite a few contacts in my phone who went to Gonzaga, and I think the sense right now is certainly, if they don't win it this year, it's going to be a bummer. It's going to be a disappointment. Everyone is kind of, that's the buzz. That's the expectation. And that's certainly the sense. I had a friend of mine sent me a text this morning of a video from back in Spokane of some Gonzaga students burning up property outside. And that's the kind of stuff usually you see in like Canada after, winning the NHL, the Stanley Cup. They're doing this prior to the actually winning the championship. So you can kind of tell. Maybe that's the cart before the horse thing, but certainly a lot of optimism and reason for optimism that this is their year. And it's also really cool, I think, for those who live in this part of the country. I know some listening maybe aren't Zag fans, but just to see, I think, the possibility that a team in the Pacific Northwest can win a national championship in basketball, it's not something that happens every day, and frankly not something that happens every decade. So really exciting stuff. And again, it's not Oregon, and I know we're going to talk about that, but it's certainly, for me, it keeps my attention fully on the Final Four this weekend and in the national championship, which I really do feel like Gonzaga is positioning themselves to win. And it feels kind of crazy to say that, considering, the history of this program.
Well, I'll tell you what, if it's Baylor and Gonzaga, it's a maybe. I just think they handle anybody else without a problem. But anyway, let's get to the Duck women. Seemed like down the stretch they just had no answers. Then they rallied. They beat South Dakota to start the big dance, the gutty win against Georgia. Then in the Sweet 16 game against Louisville, already they don't have their point guard. They lose Maddie Shear. They lose Niara Sabali. I mean, I know they don't make excuses, Eric, and it sounds simple, but man, that was just too much to overcome.
I felt really bad for that team and those group of women, and especially on the Niara Sabali, who's dealt with a bunch of injuries before. And it felt like, in both instances, right before that, player X or Y gets hurt, they were kind of positioning themselves to at least compete for, the game. And obviously, you look at the final score, they lose by 18, and it wasn't close over the last couple minutes of the fourth quarter. But Dana Evans, Louisville's top player, one of the best players in the country, doesn't score in the first quarter when Maddie Shear is on her. Yep. Goes 0-for-5, and Louisville leads by 2. And you're kind of feeling like, okay, they kind of have a solution for Evans. And that's really Louisville's game plan. You watched that team, I think, if you watched them in, obviously, the Sweet 16 and then in the Elite Eight against Stanford, as I did, I mean, that team really, the heart and soul of it, Evans. And if she's not going, they're not that impressive, I don't think. And I kind of felt like through one quarter until Shear goes down that, hey, they kind of have a solution here. They at least have an answer. It's going to make it tough. And I don't think it's by accident that Evans then explodes for, I think it was 11 or 13 points in the second quarter, and Louisville outscores Oregon 19-6, and suddenly it's a little bit different complexion on the game. And then in the third quarter, Oregon kind of figures things out a little bit. And offensively, they start getting it going, and it's all through Nayara Thompson in the block. She has 10 points in that quarter. Oregon gets to within 8 points, has the ball. Aaron Boley grabs a rebound, and just, again, bad luck. Nayara Thompson lands on Aaron Boley's foot. Looks like a pretty bad ankle sprain. Doesn't return to the game, and Oregon really doesn't have much of a prayer from there, I don't think. And I posted on Twitter, and I really believe, like, if those two teams played with Oregon at full strength, it's probably a one- or two-score game, and who knows, maybe Oregon's able to execute better down the stretch. So that was tough, and, I mean, I think, again, the complexion of this season and this tournament changes a little bit based upon health, and obviously Tahina Paupau, arguably the second or third most valuable player, wasn't available for any of the games. You just kind of wonder, and of course injuries are part of this, and Oregon fans know this very well because they have a history of going into these postseasons, and whether it be, you know, football or basketball or whatnot, and things kind of going awry. And this was another instance of that, and I don't think anybody thinks they would have beaten Stanford or that they would have won a national championship, but certainly I think that this team had a chance to win some more games, or at least win one more game if everyone's healthy. They don't get that. It's a tough way to end a season, and for like an Aaron Boley and a Lydia Giomi, a tough way to end a career where, you know, especially for Aaron, where she puts everything on the court, and yet it doesn't end up meaning much in the win or loss column. So tough way to end the season. I think, again, really, really have to like the way they close, though. After losing 5 of 6 in the regular season in a Pac-12 tournament to win a couple of games, to beat a 3 seed in Georgia, to play Louisville tough when everyone was healthy, I think that showed a lot to the character of this team, which is something I think some people kind of wonder in going into it.
No, and the future obviously is brilliant. Talking with Eric Scopel, let's get to the men also in the Sweet 16. Uneven performance, to say the least, against USC. Their length and size gave them so much trouble. But the bottom line to me, Eric, this team's got to shoot well to beat good teams. They hit 5 of 21 from downtown. Richardson, Figueroa, and Williams bricked all night. Safe to say it was just too much to overcome.
Yeah, they needed to be firing on all cylinders, and I don't know if people recognized how tough a matchup USC was. I think those that were following the team earlier in the year and had watched the game in L.A. and the way that transpired kind of recognized that, boy, this is not ideal. USC's size, their length, make it really difficult on defense. And for Oregon to win that kind of a game, they're going to have to shoot the lights out. And for it to go the other way, where USC is the one hitting, I think, 10 of 23 or 10 of 24 or something like that, you might have the numbers pulled up, I don't. It kind of was just like, you're not going to win that game against USC if they're shooting that well and you're not shooting that well. And I think, honestly, I wonder, like, you know, if Oregon hits 4 or 5 more threes, maybe the game's a little closer. But with the way USC was shooting it that night, and with Oregon's, you know, shortcomings on the interior in terms of defending a player like Evan Mobley, who, by the way, like, that might be the first or second overall draft pick, didn't have to have a very good game against the Ducks for USC to win pretty handily. It really required their best effort, and especially offensively, to have, you know, Duarte and Amari both had great games. I think they combined for almost 50 points. But to see your other three starters who've all been so consistent during this run and big parts, especially Will Richardson and LJ Figueroa, to see them really, like you said, kind of be bricklayers out there, that's kind of all she wrote, sadly. You know, and I think it was a senior veteran team. You're going to see Duarte and Amari go pro, move on. Will Richardson, Eric Williams will be back. LJ Figueroa, I think, is the one where maybe there's some opportunity for him to return, but we'll see here in the next couple of days and weeks if what transpires there. But it's, you know, this was a group that I thought really could make some noise because of the experience factor and the fact that they really had come together. And again, playing a style that's very unique, a bunch of 6'5", 6'6 guys that have the versatility to guard bigger teams, to get up and down, to win in the half court. It's not particularly you know, it's a little bit different from what you're used to seeing, a little bit of a change. And I think it's, I'll miss watching that team is what I'll say. That, sure. That they were really fun to watch down the stretch. You know, next year's team is going to look a lot different, a lot different. They're going to be, they could start a couple of guys that are over 6'10", probably will. I mean, Frank Kepdong really came on, and Felipe Dante is back. Nate Biddle was a, you know, he's one of the best recruits in the state of Oregon history, a five-star. He's 6'11". They bring in Isaac Johnson. He's a, coming from his more mission. He was a top 65 recruit a couple of years ago. He's another 6'10", 6'11 kid. So the size will be very different, and I think the style will be very different next year. But I think I'm probably not alone in saying it was really fun to watch a group like that where it's just so fundamentally different from what you're used to seeing, and where from night to night, if they can get hot, they can play with anybody. I don't know if they would have challenged Gonzaga, but I think Gonzaga probably would have been a more favorable matchup than USC, especially when USC is shooting like that.
And by the way, I did have the numbers. They hit 59% from downtown, 57% from the floor. And
that's not going to cut it.
No. Some football thoughts for Eric Scopel. Spring practice is almost upon us. I know with our buddy Matt Preem, you interact with the fans, you know, the Aughts and Audibles mailbag, the podcast. So In throwing it out there like you did and trying to kind of get the pulse of the fans of what their biggest area of concern is, would I be on the money saying probably quarterback with Tyler Shuck and Lubbock, Anthony Brown back and with new faces? How close am I?
I think you're on the money. You know, I put together a story on DuckTerritory.com on Monday of just the five storylines I'm most interested in and you know, or that are most intriguing entering spring camp, which, by the way, spring ball starts tomorrow, Thursday, yep. April 1st, first practice. First chance we're going to have to talk with Mario Cristobal since signing day. It'll be about 2 months. So, you know, this is pretty significant. Obviously, the way this works out, Oregon's going to have 15 practices in April, a little different than past years where they've had a break. Spring game will be May 1st, so there's just kind of the update for those who haven't seen the schedule. But, yeah, I think the quarterback position is it's at the forefront of everyone's mind because anybody who watches football regularly understands that position is the key to winning football games. You can win games with adequate quarterback play, and you can really win games, a lot of games, with really good quarterback play. And you know that because you look at the teams that have won conference championships at Oregon, the teams that have played for you know, college football playoffs or for, you know, in January and the Rose Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl, those teams have traditionally had really good quarterbacks. The Darren Thomases and the Marcus Mariotas and the Justin Herberts and the teams that haven't been quite as good typically haven't had as good a quarterback play. And I don't think there's a quarterback on this roster that is a Justin Herbert, Marcus Mariota. Maybe there's a guy who can be a Darren Thomas. Not that I think Darren's that far off. The other two obviously didn't have the pro career, but I think he's one of the more underrated players in the last decade or so from Oregon. But I think you look at this and think you've got to find more consistent quarterback play than what we saw with Tyler Shuck last year. There's a reason Shuck is now at Texas Tech, like you said. I think if he would have come back, there's a chance he would have won the starting job again. I think there's a chance he wouldn't have won it. He'd be leaving now, and I think that, or he'd be leaving after spring. So we enter spring with Anthony Brown, somebody who we got to see, I don't know, 40 or 50 snaps of from the last couple of games of the 2020 season, a player who has experience. You know, he's 23 years old. He's started a couple dozen games at Boston College. You know, he has at least a pedigree that suggests he can be a starting quarterback at this level. Now, how good can he be? I think that's what the spring is going to be about learning. And then the other part is you've got some really, really highly regarded freshman quarterbacks, 3 4-star recruits, in Jay Butterfield and Robbie Ashford and Ty Thompson. Butterfield and Ashford have been around the program. They were here last year. Thompson is probably a name most listening are familiar with. Highest rated quarterback prospect Oregon's ever signed. Big time kid out of the state of Arizona. Just a cannon for an arm. Probably going to be somebody who, if he does develop, will just be a little different than what Oregon has had. And he's maybe not that different in terms of, like, he could probably pump the ball down the field a little bit like Justin Herbert could, you know, when he's at his best. Sure. But the question is, are any of those guys really ready? Those guys played it down, and Oregon opens its season with Fresno State and then Ohio State. And do you really want to toss one of those guys out there? And maybe the answer is yes, and it's trial by fire. But, I mean, in terms of trying to win those football games, the veteran Anthony Brown is probably a little bit safer bet. So, I mean, I think going to spring, you just want to see. I mean, I don't expect Mario Cristobal to name a starting quarterback. That's not really been his MO. Even last year, he didn't announce a starting quarterback really at all. I mean, it was basically the first game of the season against Stanford. And, hey, Tyler Shuck's out there. I guess he's the starter. I don't know if it'll be quite that drastic this year, but I think what we're going to get out of spring practice is just a better idea of kind of who the real contenders are. Is it as simple as it's Anthony Brown or Ty Thompson? What about Jay Butterfield? And I think the wild card here, too, for those that may be not familiar, is Robbie Ashford plays on the Oregon baseball team and is a pretty good center fielder. Is he going to be fully focused and committed to the football program and trying to win a starting quarterback job, or will he have his attention a little bit split? And I think that's kind of the sort of things we're curious, I think, learning in the spring is, okay, who are the real contenders? Is it two guys? Is it three guys? Could it be four guys? And then by the time the spring game rolls around on May 1st, we'll get to see these guys play and have a better idea of, in live game reps, you know, who can actually drive the football down the field, make the decisions with a live rush. And it's going to be a good live rush when you've got a guy like Kayvon Thibodeau on the other side, guys like Noah Sewell, Justin Swell, et cetera. So looking forward to the spring game. And again, this is a year that's a little different. You know, typically, myself, you mentioned Matt Priam, the two of us are at all of Oregon's full practices watching them. That's not going to be the case this year because of COVID-19. We're not allowed there. So really the only, at least that I know of, unless there's a surprise scrimmage that we're able to attend, the only opportunity, I believe, for media and fans alike to watch this team will be the spring game. So that's going to be a huge day, you know, in terms of learning who actually has a shot to do this and who looks good under the bright lights of Autzen.
Well, the bottom line is at least they're getting the 15 practices and there will be a spring game. So 2021 already sounding better. Folks, he's Eric Scopel. And again, he does an awesome job, keeps us wired into Oregon sports. For Duck Territory, duckterritory.com. On Twitter, use the handle Eric_Scopel. Scopes, always a pleasure. Great info. And I hope I can actually talk to you face-to-face again someday.
Hey, wouldn't that be fun? That'd be a nice pressure for us there. But we'll see what happens here. I'm going to hold my breath, I guess.
All right. Have a good one, Eric. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, you too.
Take it easy.